2 days before the 1 year anniversary of Brawl Out, AEW has fired CM Punk from the company, terminating his wrestler and his employment agreement, as announced via statement. Now, we are here, of course, like we do on Sundays, to review Collision. And this is going to be the very first episode of Collision that we are reviewing without CM Punk, a show that was made to be centered around him. I'm Mr. Warren Hayes, of course. Welcome. Whether you're watching this on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or listening to this on your favorite podcast platform, thank you for being here today. And I want to make you a bit of a little lay of the land here. We're not going to spend this entire review talking about CM Punk. I will probably go more in depth into my thoughts and analysis and what we can maybe think about for the future. I'll probably be doing that this Tuesday on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper as we record live at 7 p.m. Eastern. Available the next day for all platforms. But nonetheless, this is the first opportunity that I get to talk about it since the announcement yesterday. I record this on Sunday, so, you know, for just to make sure we're clear here, it is September 3rd. 2023. It is the day of All Out, I this is the first opportunity that I get to talk about it since the news dropped yesterday, a bit out of nowhere. Something that I think surprised a lot of people. I think it surprised most people, to be perfectly honest. But I believe, if I were to share just a few thoughts, I believe this is the best possible outcome for a man who has been a liability to this company for the better part of a year, who threw this company into turmoil, like I said, just about a year ago, for the better part of the year. He even got jumpy when it was time to announce his television show a couple of months ago in spring, to the point where he was pulled from the graphics the day before the announcement, and he kept picking fights with people in his own head, and who threw the biggest show in professional wrestling in turmoil as well, minutes before it was about to start. As we have said numerous times here on this podcast, it was never a question of if, it was a question of when. And apparently, Wembley was the last straw. TK has put out statements. We'll talk about them. And TK being, of course, Tony Khan. I'm in no level of familiarity with him. I don't know why I'm going around calling him TK. But Khan has mentioned fearing for his safety and the safety of others, including non-talent employees and staff. So whatever happened at Wembley Stadium in London last week was the last straw. And for a guy who talks about, building a business, working together with others, getting people over, workers' rights, CM Punk sure has a way to make everything about himself. He sure has that talent, unable to set himself apart from the bigger picture. Now, I understand you might have, you might get a little hot if someone is taking veiled shots at you on pay-per-view, but is the time to settle this minutes before your company's biggest show they ever put on, not only your company's, but the business's biggest show ever put on? Was that a wise decision? No, probably not. And I know that there is this is one of these circumstances where I see very clearly that there is a generation of new wrestling fans here who are surprised, who are grieving, who are just outright angry for whatever reasons, and who are still trying to make some sense of this and even try to defend what has happened. That it's others, but Folks, I need to remind everyone that this is not a one-off thing. This is not just CM Punk suddenly, you know, acting this way for no particular reason. There is a pattern of behavior throughout this man's multi-decade career. We can go back. We can pinpoint things. There is a pattern of behavior, which is why I have always purported, and I'm not special, I wasn't alone in this, but I was firmly in this camp, that it was never a question of if CM Punk was going to implode, more of a question of when. So anyone who, you know, who's trying to make sense of this is ignoring or is just blissfully unaware of a past that makes everything happening here unsurprising to a degree, but nonetheless surprising. I think many of us, and I myself, and I've talked about this a few times, but I myself was enchanted at the idea of CM Punk returning to pro wrestling, and especially the way he came. Look, I was at the fucking United Center. What do you want from me? I was there on that rampage when he came back. And I think a lot of us were excited at the idea of CM Punk returning. What does he still have to bring? What can he bring to the business? He still has a lot to give. And he seemed happy. He seemed uplifted. He seemed, life. But this only lasted a few months. We were all fearing that the dark cloud was going to return. It never really left. It was always there. And I think that's what stings the most in a lot of circumstances. And something that I find no joy in. I find no joy in any of this. Absolutely not. I'm not going to be a weirdo and take a victory lap telling you, I told you so, because all of this stinks. And it stinks from the moment he came back, where I guess we were all hoping that we would get a true return to CM Punk, of CM Punk to pro wrestling. Veteran who wants to give back, who's ready to set the past aside, but no. But no, the tiger stripes and whatnot. I am thankful that Tony Khan did this, that he finally made a very important decision on this level, one that I feel he should have done a while back. I'm not going to let Tony Khan off the hook, but we're not talking about this today. This is absolutely something that we're going to keep on Tuesday, and this is a very crucial talking point. But this was an important This was important for Tony Khan to establish his leadership in this circumstance here. And he said it himself. He said he feared for his safety, the safety of others. Well then, sequestering a guy over on Saturday nights isn't going to work. And the minute this guy starts intermingling, leaves the comfort zone, leaves his little nest on Saturdays, and has to go mingle with the other inmates, everything instantly blows up. Every time he has left Collision, folks, we've heard stuff. Things have happened. But he doesn't want drama, right? Because here's the look. Again, I don't want to get too much into the weeds, and I am talking to myself right now, Warren. We have to move on. But you know, I may sound bitter and I may sound like I'm rejoicing, but I'm not, because I think pro wrestling is infinitely more interesting with CM Punk in it. I really do. I said it just this week. This will always be a place where we will discuss CM Punk, because CM Punk has a direct impact on pro wrestling, on the business of pro wrestling. I will never not talk about him here. And while I think these were all good decisions for the good of AEW, I can still bemoan the fact that this is happening and that it sucks and that no one was big enough to just set things aside and move on. But no, we had to carry grudges. We had to be weird about it and be silent and whatnot. We preferred to create zones of exclusivity within the roster, as opposed to sitting everyone down, putting your fucking hands down, putting your fucking fist down, and sitting everyone around a table and saying, "Hash this out. We're done now." Like, of course, all of this sucks, but I still think this is the best decision because the patterns of behavior are there and they are clear and they're detrimental. But right now, I will miss CM Punk, the wrestler. I will miss the guy. I will miss him for the causes that he champions and brandishes bravely, proudly on television. But the rest I will not miss. So as for, well, what are you going to do with Collision now? Which is the dumbest thing you could be asking. Step out of your little bubble here. We're going to talk about how Collision is going to be impacted, how it's already been impacted. Because my gut feeling tells me that CM Punk, as far as the success of Collision has been so far, has been only mildly responsible. And there is data to back this up. Well, we'll talk about that on Tuesday. Because right now we're going to talk about AEW Collision that happened on September 2nd from the United Center in Chicago, Illinois. 4,265 distributed tickets for a setup of 5,005. Again, standard fare for AEW, but you would have to expect, you would have to think that that AEW would have wanted more out of a passage to Chicago than this, which have been usually quite successful. 9,510 tickets distributed for All Out tomorrow. Still angling to be more successful than All Out 2022, but still haven't broken 10,000 tickets. And I mean, look, the last time the opening Collision, that's the last time we came to the United Center this year. First night of Collision, June 17, 9,280 tickets. It's about half that we got last night. Again, I want to know, is CM Punk, is Collision in that much dire straits because CM Punk is going to be gone? Again, we'll talk about this in another moment. Right now, we're going to get into this show, which opens with TK in a cold open in a pre-tape segment where he announced the termination of Phil Brooks. This is verbatim what he said here. "Today, I had to make one of the toughest decisions of my professional career. Today, I terminated Phil Brooks, CM Punk for cause. This stems from a backstage incident at AEW All In last Sunday. The incident was regrettable and it endangered people backstage. That includes the production staff, the people who helped put the show on every week, innocent people who had nothing to do with it. I've been going to wrestling shows for over 30 years. I've been producing them on this network for nearly 4 years. Never in all that time have I ever felt, until last Sunday, that my security, my safety, my life was in danger at a wrestling show. I don't think anyone should feel that way at work. I don't think the people I work with should feel that way. And I had to make a very difficult choice today. It came at the recommendation of a discipline committee here in AEW, as well as outside legal counsel, who delivered a unanimous recommendation, and I have followed up on that recommendation. I'm sorry to any fans who are upset by this. And of course, the rest of the state, he goes on talking about the successes of AEW over the past week. But this is, of course, the statement. This adds on to the statement that was sent out earlier in the day via social media on via AEW's numerous channels. This basically adds on to it. A couple of the things that I had been mentioning myself in my own opening remarks here. Him hammering home the fact that there were people not involved in any of this who were put in danger. You know, if we know the stories pretty much all seem to collaborate that, you know, it happened at Gorilla and that, you know, monitors were falling on top of people and so on and so forth. So I think there's a lot that has to do with that. There was probably some things being flung around or whatnot. I think it's very interesting that he started up the show with this. He also gave a similar statement in front of the live crowd as well. And honestly, you have to applaud Tony Khan for doing this. And you know why? Well, because everything is always shrouded in so much fucking mystery that it's good to just have some definitive clarity here, where we're not going to be in it like we were in the past year, where it's like, is CM Punk gone? Is he still here? What's his status? What's going on? We would have entered another circumstance here where sources and, you know, reporters doing their best to get the news out there, to get us some kind of inkling of what's going on. They would have done their best to do it, but we'd all be sitting around here going, oh, well, they're just talking about sources. We don't have any real information. What is going on? It would all be reports and speculation and innuendo and rumors. Now it's clear. And if we had more of this in professional wrestling, if the relationship that major promotions had with the media was this transparent, this straightforward, we wouldn't have all this fucking nonsense that goes on a daily basis, where people feel like they have to settle into camps, where people accuse other journalists of being liars and making shit up, using terms like stooge test to figure out whether someone is telling the truth or not, or is can be trustworthy or not. This is the kind of situation that we should always be in, and that's why I applaud this and I'm thankful for that. But it goes even beyond whatever media implications this has, because a lot of shit has just been nipped in the bud here, right? But it goes beyond that, because I think it's good for the fans who bought tickets to Collision and All Out, because it's clarity. You don't have to be happy about it. You don't have to be happy about Phil Brooks being fired on a big pay-per-view weekend, where you may be a Chicago guy or gal or non-binary pal who bought a ticket and wanted to see Phil Brooks, CM Punk. Maybe now you're like, you're left there holding the bag, but you cannot not be mad that AEW wasn't upfront about it. They didn't try to disguise it. They didn't try to downplay it. It's like, well, things are happening. You know, kind of like when CM Punk and the Elite were stripped of their titles last September, and everyone's like, okay, but what's the rest? This is so clear. So from a promoter's point of view, this was in a terrible situation, in an objectively suck situation. This was the absolute best way to go about it. This was absolutely the best way to flip this around and go about it and just tell your audience, your paying audience, I'm sorry, everyone, but this is, he's not going to be here anymore. Instead of being, you know, doing more cloak and dagger stuff and embroiling, covering yourself in a shroud of mystery, which is something that pro wrestling has a history of doing, right? So I can only hope, this is my hope here, is that Tony's statements here are received with enough positive coverage that he feels emboldened to continue to do this, as opposed to, I can't comment, I can't say, deflecting, avoiding. He doesn't really avoid, but he deflects. It's a dark time, don't get me wrong, and it's, you know what, it's a shit thing to start off your pro wrestling show with, but I think it was necessary, and I'm glad he did it, and I'm glad he did it in front of the live crowd as well. Tony Schiavone's in the ring. He's there to chat with Ricky Starks. Starks, who comes in, starts cutting a promo on how he is so tired about starting over, no matter what obstacles are thrown his way, right? He continues to improve, so on and so forth. And he turns around and he starts putting over Big Bill, who's there at ringside with him, saying he's a real dude, talking about his battles with addictions and how he had to start over and he's always improved. And now he's the best big man on earth or whatever. And this absolutely seemed completely out of place with the match that he had in place the very next night for All Out against Ricky Steamboat. Like, the entire opening 2 to 3 minutes, like 3-4 minutes of his promo, I'd say. 3 minutes, maybe 4 is a little too much, but a good chunk of his opening promo was him talking about getting screwed over and how he's tired of it, but how he'll continue fighting, which leads me to believe that this was a CM Punk spot, that he was supposed to fight CM Punk at All Out, and that he's bitter about it because he's getting the rug pulled from under him again. Now, there's a lot of things you can say about Ricky Starks' booking since he lost to Chris Jericho. Now, since he won Chris Jericho, and since he won the feud with Chris Jericho, because I don't think he's been booked particularly well. And that's not a knock on Ricky. That's a knock on the guy holding the pencil. And if he's annoyed that CM Punk is leaving him high and dry, he absolutely should be. And he should be annoyed at CM Punk. And he should be annoyed at the boss. He should be. Because Ricky Starks should be in a bigger spot on the card than this. He should be much higher than how he's being handled. So all this reads to me that he was supposed to get the CM Punk match, which was absolutely booked that way when they were like, okay, he's going to come out and challenge for a strap match, challenge Ricky Steamboat to a strap match. And then we all assumed that Ricky Steamboat was going to have someone fight for him by proxy. So that allows a plan A and a plan B and a plan C if you need. So, you know, plan A being CM Punk sticks around, we stick with that. Or plan B being someone else. Anyway, we do eventually get to talking about the match itself, talking about the strap match. Ricky Steamboat comes out and he has a contract, tells Ricky, look, if you want to fight the Dragon, you have to sign here. He even shows the contract. Look, it's written Ricky Starks versus the Dragon. I'm pretty sure that doesn't stand legally, but it's look, I don't give a shit about paperwork in pro wrestling. And it's really funny, he shows it. So Ricky signs it, and then Steamboat says, yes, you're going to fight the Dragon, but there is another Dragon here as well. And he's talking about the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, who pops out, big surprise return, when, you know, Tony Khan basically when there's an emergency, he breaks the glass and either pulls out John Moxley or Danielson, and both guys rise to the occasion. So I would say, in regards to Ricky Starks here, backup plan here. Like, it's not as if he's getting Ethan Page. No disrespect, but you know what I mean. It's not as if he's, you know, we're turning around and we're giving him, you know, Kip Sabian or Ethan Page or Matt Hardy. He's getting the Dragon. He's getting Danielson. So that's pretty cool. Danielson comes out, gets a tremendous reaction. And you know what? I'm looking at Danielson arrive. I'm looking at him arrive. Coming out, the reaction, his smile, the arms. And I'm like, I already feel lighter. I'm like, okay. This already feels good. There's not going to be any wink, wink, backstage stuff. There's not going to be any meta references. We're just going to go in there and we're going to have a hefty good time in this match. Because you know Danielson is going to, he's nuts. And he's going to make Ricky look good. And Ricky will probably get this win. Because Danielson doesn't need it. Danielson beat fucking Kazuchika Okada earlier this year. He's fine. He can take L's. I thought this was the best course you could take. I understand why they wanted to put this at the top of the show to get this out of the way. Look, would you call it an upgrade? See, I avoided using the upgrade. I think it's a good sub. I don't know if it's an upgrade. I think we're on the same level of heightened, of superstar here, where it's like, oh, sweet. And a nice return. We're getting Danielson on the pay-per-view. I mean, I'm content. I'm happy. And I think it sends a statement as well. I think this is deliberate in another way as well. You want to hear my theory? This is just a theory. I think this is a deliberate addition here. Substitution, I should say. By Tony Khan. Just to show us all. Hey, don't worry. We're going to be fine. Don't forget there's other people working here than CM Punk. We're all going to be fine. This roster is take a minute to look at this roster, and it is probably the deepest fucking roster in the history of pro wrestling at one single given time in history. And if you want to go back and watch it, you know, even last week when Punk was around, like, I can understand why there's difficulty booking people. Like, Christ, the talent is immeasurable in this company. Look at all the people who are on this paid roster. But yeah, I think Danielson is I think there's a little bit of that in this. I think there's a little bit of ooh la la. I think there's a little bit of that in here, where Tony Khan is basically telling us, don't worry, folks. We'll survive. We're going to be okay. And spoiler alert, they are going to be okay. Oh, God, there's a lot of stuff I want to say right now, but I am keeping it for Tuesday because I want to stay on focus here. And I want to get this out before the fucking pay-per-view, too. I'm recording this on Sunday. There's a pay-per-view coming out. Warren. Stop going long. Mox is backstage. He cuts a tremendous promo on Orange Cassidy where he essentially puts him over. And this show, if anything, is becoming the Orange Cassidy Appreciation Hour, where everyone is coming out of the woodwork going, holy shit, Orange Cassidy is great. Orange Cassidy is tremendous. Something that you, my A-plus audience, have been privy to because of my expert analysis on the situation, where I've been telling you all for so long how great Orange Cassidy is and that how much it's only been consecrated with this international title run, which is an all-timer modern championship run. World, mid-card, it's an all-timer. All of them mixed together. Mox, not unlike myself, asks, who still calls him a cosplay wrestler? I know who. But these are people who are of bad faith, or don't watch the product, or both. Likely both. And if you're not stoked for Mox versus Orange Cassidy at this point, might as well talk about it. Orange Cassidy at the end of the show cuts a promo as well. Might as well get all of this out of the way. He cuts another good promo. And he hates that he hates this because he doesn't want to be talking. But he mentions how his first AEW singles match was in Chicago. And he proved he belonged. Then it was last year at Forbidden Door against Will Ospreay where he was back here. And he proved that he could hang with some of the greatest wrestlers in the world. Now it's Jon Moxley who is just the best. And he puts Moxley over as well. Saying that, you know, when AEW needed this guy, he put the entire company on his back. And you can talk about CM Punk as much as you want, but Jon Moxley will forever be remembered as the fucking backbone of this fucking company. The guy that pulled through, came through every single time this fucking nonsense happened over the past 12 months. And he says tomorrow, he's going to take the company off of his back, him being Moxley, and he's going to put it on his because he's Orange Cassidy and he does not have a catchphrase. Another great promo. Look, it doesn't take much when you have talented professional wrestlers to get you excited for a professional wrestling match. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take weeks of build. It doesn't take weird emotes in the camera. Doesn't need, you know, you don't need trials and betrayals over and over again. You don't need kangaroo kicks. You just need really fucking talented pro wrestlers. That's all. And when you have them, like I just said, this roster does up and down. You can just let them go and do their own thing. And we get the AEW World Trios title match where Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed defeated 2.0 and Dan Garcia back to the OG group, right? Back to how all three of those guys debuted in the company. There's some shtick between Garcia and Billy Gunn involving hip thrusts. And I love how Garcia has no quibbles regarding it. I really appreciate that. Heels start stringing some offense together here on Anthony Bowens. They hit a pile driver, a double DDT, and a dragon tamer by Garcia gets locked in. The Acclaimed, however, get the win when Daddy Magic tags himself in just as Garcia's starting to cook. You're like, oh, okay, just a little something-something there. That leads to a Famouser, the arrival, and the mic drop for the win. It was fine. Lexi Nair is backstage with the Dark Order. Oh, Jake Hager was there as well doing stuff at ringside. But Lexi Nair is backstage with the Dark Order. They cut a promo for tomorrow's Ring of Honor. Not tomorrow, it's tonight, but the all out Zero Hour. Is it on the Zero? It's not on the Zero Hour. It's on the main show. Ring of Honor tag titles that they're going to try and get off of the Better Than You Bay. It's not going to happen. But that being said, they announced a bunch of matches, like three matches, I think, overall for Zero Hour, which makes me very happy because I really don't like, let me rephrase this. I do not care about the kayfabe analysis discussion panels on these shows. And it's the same thing with WWE. And I don't like it that AEW has a tendency to do them. I prefer the matches. Give us some matches. I'm sitting down to watch wrestling. Give me some wrestling. Tony Schiavone is backstage again, and he runs into Starks and Big Bill, who are leaving, and Starks says that he's going to show everyone he is absolute. Okie dokie. Aussie Open are next. They defeat Commander and Nick Wayne. And a fun opener by the baby faces here. They open up the match real fun with Commander using Mark Davis as a base to do fun little lucha things. Aussie Open hit an assisted top rope cutter. They do the exchange stalling suplex as well. Nick Wayne's hot tag includes a sliced bread and a topi con hilo. Mark Davis does one of my favorite moves in pro wrestling, the yank pile driver, where he just grabs the leg, yanks the guy up off the mat into the pile driver position, just goes clonk. God, I love it. Nick Wayne tries to fight both guys off, but he heats the Coriolis for the win. So, a win for Aussie Open. Jesus Christ. Okay. They hit the bricks. Nick Wayne stays in the ring where I believe it's Tony Schiavone who asks him, you know, so what do you think about Darby forgiving AR Fox? Nick Wayne says, I have issues with this. Darby comes out and he says, look, you have to let that hatred go. Look, they're trying to make something out of this. But I'm not sure. And if this leads, I promise you, listen to your boy Warren. Because the whole thing, AR Fox, you know, now suddenly being on Darby Allin's good graces, and you have to let the hatred go. I'm like, you're a pro wrestler, buddy. Look, I get it that holding on to unnecessary grudges is a thing, and that you should not do that because it can poison you. But when you break it down, it's like, look, you're a pro wrestler. You use this hatred, this anger to get into the ring and settle things in the ring with people, right? What if Nick Wayne finds the father figure he always wanted in Christian? And what if Nick Wayne costs Darby the title because of it? Because Darby asked Nick Wayne, I would be honored if you would come join me. And Nick Wayne didn't seem necessarily all that enthralled at, you know, convinced. You know, right, he wasn't crossing his arms going, yeah, you're right, Darby, I need to let this go. Yeah, the guy invaded my home and cracked my skull with a picture of my dead father, and I bled. So what if the father figure of AEW, Christian Cage, does indeed become Nick Wayne's father? Tell me that would not rule. Anyway, after we have all of this coming out, but then Christian comes out and he mentioned, while he was running, you know, he was talking about Nick Wayne's dad last week, he forgot to ask his mother's name. She's not at ringside tonight, but maybe I could slip into her DMs. And Christian Cage never misses. And at some point, the Chicago crowd is chanting something at him, and he loses his composure. He breaks a bit. I don't know what they were chanting at him, but that was, you know, it was good stuff. But look, he basically puts over Luchasaurus winning it all out. How they will still be TNT champion. I don't know. I wouldn't pull the plug on this just yet. I think this TNT title run for Christian, for Luchasaurus and Christian, see, I'm doing it too now, has been tremendous. Like, it is tremendous stuff. Claudio is backstage. He cuts a promo where he's like, oh, Eddie, you beat up Wheeler? Well, we beat up Wheeler every day. Whomp. Wheeler Yuta's right there, and he just uppercuts him, and Wheeler gets back up and whomp, eats another one. And he says, but the difference is that Wheeler always gets back up. And he laments Eddie not changing since he came back from Japan. Then we cut to a pre-tape or whatever somewhere else in the arena. Eddie and Katsuyori Shibata are there because they're going to be fighting at All Out. Kingston knows Claudio, won't give him another one-on-one because he's a coward. He asks Shibata if he has anything to say. And Shibata pulls up Google Translate where he says, you both suck. That was really funny with that, you know, cold, impassive glare of Katsuyori Shibata just pulling it up, and that's good stuff. Lexi Nair is interviewing the new women's champion, Saraya. Ruby Soho is there as well. Lexi wants to know about all this dissension she saw with the outcasts at in London. But Saraya says, hey, that's mean girl behavior. You shouldn't do that. That looks ugly on you. This is probably... look, Saraya was very good here. And I would say this was the best promo she's cut since she's arrived in WWE. AEW. I'm sorry. She said, you're asking stupid questions, but, you know, you should be asking me about how it felt to win in front of my country people. But now we're stuck back in America. She makes comments about Chicago's breath. Ruby cuts a promo about how Chris Statlander has never beaten her. And they're not worried about Toni Storm, although they just saw her outside half naked throwing shoes at birds. I like the Toni Storm stuff. And Saraya, honestly, this was the best. Everything Saraya did tonight, I think she was at her best. Tony Schiavone is in the ring to call in Dennis Rodman of all the people on God's green flat earth. We're reconnecting with WCW superstar Dennis Rodman. Shortly thereafter, Jeff Jarrett comes out and his crew as well, before actually Rodman can say anything. Jarrett basically drives this promo. He says everyone in this ring has something in common with Rodman. He and Rodman were both in the NWO, and that is just too sweet and for life. Satnam Singh is one of the greatest basketball players alive. Jay Lethal has been a champ since day one. Sanjay Dutt strives for world peace everywhere he goes, and that made me guffaw very loudly. And Karen looks great in a dress. So they all have something in common with Rodman. And Jarrett, you know, invites him to join their group. Rodman refuses. Rodman shoves Sanjay Dutt to the floor. And when the rest of the group circles the ring, the Acclaim come out for the save. And they announce that at All Out, they will have Rodman in their corner. We have a pre-tape for Shane Taylor, basically putting over his past TV title run in Ring of Honor as one of the most dominant TV champions that the company has ever had. Samoa Joe then shows up for a promo saying last week has been turbulent, to say the least. Now, you know, look, Samoa Joe isn't one of those guys. If he's dropping tweets and making snide little comments, a side comment here in his promo, you know that this guy was fed up. And I think Samoa Joe gives me the impression that he's the kind of guy who can take it, and that his ceiling for his tolerance for bullshit is terribly high. And I think this is a demonstration that he's had enough. And he's going to beat Taylor at All Out. And we get the Outcasts defeating the team of Dr. Britt Baker, Hikaru Shida, and Chris Statlander. Good little opening segment between Tony and Statlander after a heat segment. Later on, Statlander gets the hot tag, spinning powerbomb and a power slam. Toni Storm accidentally breaks up a Saraya pin attempt, but Saraya later on spray paints Britt Baker right in the face, and Ruby Soho lands the Destination Unknown for the win on Britt Baker. So Britt Baker eating shit, which is still puzzling to me, but Britt is still a star. Good little match. Adam Cole had a pre-taped promo. He said he respects the Dark Order, but they're going to beat them tomorrow. And he said MJF had some things to say, so he texted it out. He sent them to him. He pulls out his phone. Says he mentions being trained by Reynolds at Create a Pro. Then says it took me 5 years to get rid of all of your nasty bad habits that you put in me. And he said the final insult is too disgusting. He talked about... what's his name? Johnny Hungy, John Silver, being a dollar store discount garden gnome, whatever. Powerhouse, and then we get a backstage standoff between Ruby Soho and Chris Statlander. There you go. Powerhouse Hobbs completely destroys GPA. Blink and you'll miss it. After the match, Miro comes out and it gets physical. So a little taste of what we're going to get tomorrow. We get a video rundown of Omega and Takeshita, which is absolutely not main eventing the show. Like, you not after the work that Cassidy and Moxley have been putting in here. That's your main event. And since we already talked about the Orange Cassidy promo, Jay White defeated Dax Harwood. I thought this was very good, although I've seen stronger outings by Dax, I feel. We got some patented Jay White stalling back suplex and a snap leg drop by Dax. Jay White half and half suplexes Harwood into the buckles. A superplex by Harwood follows and a pile driver. On the top rope, turnbuckle. Dax goes for an avalanche backdrop driver, but White shifts his weight as they're falling and ends up splashing him. Good little spot. Uranagi sleeper suplex by White follow. Dax avoids a blade runner, but lands the slingshot powerbomb. There's shenanigans on the floor. Jay White lands the blade runner. He gets Dax back into the ring. Dax briefly attempts a comeback, but eats another blade runner for the finish proper. I mean, you can't, that was a clean, that's as clean a win as you can get. There wasn't anyone swinging any chairs. There wasn't any refs being pulled to the floor. There wasn't, you know, there was nothing outside being done here. And I think commentary was putting over that Jay White was 7-0 in singles. Now he's 8-0. While I still think that the debut of Jay White in this company should have been a completely different thing, they are establishing him as a force and not just a joke either. We're closer to the final run Switchblade Jay White, where Gato wouldn't get involved as much in his matches. He'd just let Jay win and Jay would win some clean matches. Here is the same thing here. You know, the guys didn't get involved. There wasn't like heavy outside interference. There weren't chairs or belt shots or all that bullshit. Just a clean win for Jay White, I think, who is clearly, slowly being built to something. Just putting that out there. After the match, the Bucks make the save, because after the match, then the Bullet Club Gold go nuts. And the Bucks make the save. They chase off the heels. They extend a hand. But FTR now won't shake their hand. So there you go. That was the clip. There's a video going around of Matt Jackson after the show literally doing a victory lap in the ring to the boos of the Chicago crowd. And some people are taking offense to it. Don't be dorks. This is pro wrestling. This is good heat. This is it's exactly like the match that the guys had in Chicago, you know, earlier this year, the Elite, when they first came back, one of the trios during the trios Best of Seven series, where they're doing all these references and Kenny was biting someone's arm. And I mean, that's what you do. Don't be dorks. You're getting worked. Don't think this is, you know, something that is classless or baseless and shouldn't be done. This is good old-fashioned classic pro wrestling, and if you're mad at it, you're getting worked. So it's working. And that's what we're going to say about it. Not dancing on anyone's corpse. The guy they don't like got fired. Let them take a victory lap in front of that guy's home crowd. I think it's fine. Oh, but they're EVP. They're wrestlers. Now, right there, they're wrestlers. They know what to do. They know what they're doing. I think this is fine. And it's probably not going to be any better tomorrow night, especially with FTR around. Actually, it might be a little better. They might just curb it a little bit so as to not, you know, Or maybe not. Look, we'll see. When I say tomorrow night, I mean tonight. As I'm thinking on Saturday, but it really is Sunday. Anyway, we're going to leave it at that for today, for today's Collision Review. I want to thank you all for joining me today. If I haven't put it over enough, I will be talking about all of this CM Punk stuff. The denouement of the story. We'll be chatting about that this week on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast. We record on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. Of course, the replay, the edited version, is available the very next day on all of my usual channels. So you can check that out whenever you desire. So there you go. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening to the Collision Review today. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend and All Out and all of that. And I'm completely messing this up because I'm talking too much. And now you have the graphics here, you know, to watch other videos. Why watch other videos if you're watching this on YouTube? Because now you got the suggested videos here. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Just go ahead and do it. Bye, everyone.